11 minutes after 3 o'clock. I've been talking about this, and I'm excited to bring into Studio Patio my good friend, who I've not seen in so many years, I can't begin to tell you, probably early 80s. His name is Dwight Brockman, back from 79 to 82. Dwight, many of you will recall, was the voice of Night Rock on 106.1. Dwight, thanks for stopping by.
It's good to be here, John Michael Marty. Do I look as young as I did back then?
Nor do I.
Oh, man.
I know you tried. I know you tried really hard. But the thing that I've noticed is that both of us, we still have the same voice we had. We don't have the same body that we
had back then. Isn't
that
the truth?
That's true. That's true. So what brings you to the area? Because you've been away for a while.
Well, we actually are based out of the Staunton area. That's where I actually grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to kind of expand our horizons, and we wanted to travel around. So we have been doing that for the last 4 years. We bought a motorhome, and we were full-time RVing. And so we would venture out west. We would go up north. We would go down south. We ended up finding a really nice place down in McAllen, Texas. And it's in the Rio Grande Valley, and it's a very nice place that sees a lot of these senior citizens and people that are retired that come down from the northern states in Canada when it gets really cold. So they'll come down there, and they will spend maybe up to 6 months before returning home when the snow starts melting and it gets warmer up north. So we're down there. There's a lot of jamming that goes on with music. I play the guitar. I sing. I have had for the last 4 years a stage show pretty much that I've done. I do a little comedy, do a little singing. I also bring other people up that want to do some music. And there's just other activities we have down there for the people that come to that part of the country.
Is that a once-a-week show? Is that every night? Or how often do you do it?
Once a week, and then I also have two other events that I do during the course of the week. Now, this year's going to be a little different because of COVID. And we probably won't be able to do much of anything for this season. But that's fine, because I was so overrun with different things to do last season that I think I'm going to try to enjoy myself this time.
Well, can't blame you for that. You can be a snowbird of the highest caliber, not be working while you're
down there. Of the interesting things is the people that you meet. We have met so many wonderful people. In fact, one guy down in Texas, I met him. His name was Tex. I asked him. I asked him if he was born and raised in Texas. He said, "No, I was born in Louisiana." But what guy wants to be called Louise?
that's for sure. Perfect sense. All right, Dwight. That's good.
I didn't mean to throw you off.
No, John Michael. That's good. I just wasn't expecting it. That's all. That's perfect. So when you came to WSMI. Night Rock wasn't first on your list. You were doing something else.
Olga, at the time, Olga was the news reporter over at Macoupin County in Carlinville. She hired me, and I took that position covering the Verdon Town Council meetings. And after a short time, found out that there was an opening for a radio announcer at Night Rock 106 in the latter part of 1979. And that's what I was going to school for. I was attending school at Lewis and Clark Community College at their radio program and on the air at WLCA. But then I got this opportunity, and I know Olga probably wasn't very happy with me leaving because I know she loved probably doing the Verdon Town Council meetings just like I did.
Sure.
But it's just like anything, you know, with journalism, you go, you sit in these meetings, whether they're exciting or not, you cover it, you come back, and you report on it. But I did get the opportunity to go to Night Rock, and that's where I started. And, boy, it was a ride back then. I mean, there was just so much going on in the music world. Great artists that were releasing albums, late 70s, early 80s. The bands I had a chance to interview and go see at the different venues. That was even when the Coliseum Ballroom, which now has burnt down and is just a vacant parking lot in Bunnell, that's when that existed. And attended an event there with the Ozark Mountain Daredevils way back then. So there were just some really neat things happening during that time period.
Well, I think that was at the time, too, when what was then called the Prairie Capital Convention Center was doing a lot of concerts there.
And yes. So
I'm sure, and I know they used to advertise on Night Rock when those events were
happening. Oh, yes. Yeah, I went up there to see the Marshall Tucker Band and interviewed Doug Gray for the show, and Head East also was another band at the time.
Yeah, I just saw Head East last summer.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah, the Roger Boyd, the official
yes,
Head East.
That was who I interviewed, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's it was obviously a lot of fun still to this day to go see Head East.
Yeah, it's amazing to see those brands still continuing today.
Oh, yeah.
Which back then we would have never expected that, but it's just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I keep thinking of the Turtles and all those guys from the 60s that are touring around doing the Happy Together tour, which
yeah.
is also a lot of fun. I went in 1988 before I went to New York. I was at the DuQuoin State Fair, and I saw a guy put together a show that had, like, the Tokens and the Association and all these groups of Turtles, Corey Negron from Three Dog Night, and, you know, Spencer Davis Group, you know. And I saw that show in 1988. Now, that's 32 years ago.
Wow.
And a lot of them are still touring. I mean, you know, you still have Gary Puckett, you know,
yeah.
and people like that
and the union,
that are
yeah.
still performing,
yeah.
you know.
There's still a demand for that. There's a lot of people, even like for Night Rock, and it's been so long since that was back then in the late 70s, early 80s when I was there.
Right.
I know it continued for a few years after I left, but to meet people, whether it be on my Facebook timeline or whether it be just out when I'm seeing someone somewhere, they still bring up Night Rock 106.
Right.
They still talk about it. They still remember when they would get in their car on a Friday night and they would take off cruising down their main street of their local town, wherever that was, and they'd have those tunes playing in their car, and it was me in the control room and them either at the party they were at or in their car driving down one of those main streets in this area.
Yeah, back in the day when the car windows were down on a Saturday mm-hmm. night and the cars you'd pass, they were all listening to the same radio
yes,
station.
They were.
That was kind of cool. It was quadraphonic on a two-lane highway. That
yes.
was awesome. That was just amazing. Dwight, when you started in 1979, I think you said you'd replaced Mike Perry.
Correct.
And Mike Perry, of course, came in and did a great job, started this whole thing, you know, with the help of Brian,
mm-hmm.
and they had this vision for a type of radio programming that had not been seen in mid-Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we know who the big monster was in St. Louis. You had actually three stations that were probably
sure.
doing it at that time. But the thing that made Night Rock such a powerful competitor to all those was, A, not nearly as many commercials,
mm-hmm.
and, B, a certain connection that those stations couldn't have because
right.
the audience was so large.
Mm-hmm.
We still had a great audience and a big audience, but it was not the unknown audience. You may know 10% of the people who were listening
Absolutely.
To you. And then if the ones you didn't know, you got to know them because they were such faithful listeners.
Absolutely.
And they would call and call or come knock on the window.
Yes, that's true.
You had quite a story about knocking on the window. Would you tell
yeah,
that?
I was actually, and from what people may or may not know, when we do a lot of times the shows, we are there at our studios in a control room, and it's just us and the four walls and the listeners who are out there in radio land, so to speak. And one Sunday afternoon, I was on the air, and I heard a knock on the picture window, which was outside the studio. And I got up from there, and I went and looked, and there was this young man that was on the other side of the picture window. And I cranked it open, and I said to him, I said, "Can I help you?" He said, "Yeah." He says, "I'm driving from St. Louis, going up to Springfield to be with my girlfriend, and I told her that if I can, I'd stop by the station and ask if you could play a couple of songs. And if you would, she should be listening to the radio to hear those songs. And if she heard them, then she would know that I was doing okay and I was on my way up to Springfield to see her." Now, this is a time before cell phones.
Certainly.
So there was no communication back then as we have today. And he said, "Listen," he said, "if you do me this favor..." He said, "I'll be really happy if you'll do it, but I'll give you a dollar." And he put a dollar through the window onto the table. He said, "I've got a can of Pepsi," and he put that down on the table. He said, "I've got a joint." He says, "I'll put that on the table, too." And he says, "I've got a half of a bottle of Jack Daniels, and he put that on the table, too. He says, is that enough? He said, can you do those two songs for me? I kind of looked up at him. I thought about it for a moment. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You can have all this back except the Pepsi, and I'll play your songs.
That's awesome.
So excited. He said, that's great, man. He says, oh, I am so glad you're going to do this. And pretty soon then probably about an hour or so later, phone rings, I answer it, and it's him. He says, hey, I just want to let you know I got to Springfield, and I heard those songs, man. Those were great. I said, that's fine. I'm glad I made your day.
And you made an awful lot of people's day by doing that. Not only you, but let's say Mike Perry ahead of you, Pete Baum, Perry Brown and some others. Now, who else? Help me out here, because I remember, of course, Mike Perry and then you, and then Perry, and then I think it was Pete. Was there anybody after Pete? Was he the end of it?
You know, I lost track. I don't remember the succession. I don't know, and I can't answer that. I can tell you a lot about in that window of time. And John, give me just a little bit of grace.
I will.
That was almost 40 years ago.
40 years ago is right.
I remember some things, but not everything.
I know that any time we would take a tour, Terry used to always marvel at this, when we would have tours of young people, you know, like maybe fourth, fifth, sixth graders.
Yes.
And they would come out to the station, and I'm talking in the last 15 years, young people would come out and Terry would give them a peek into the record library.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just in awe
that
those things played music, you know,
the vinyl records.
Yes, vinyl records, that's right.
And sometimes we'd be sitting there, and of course we had two turntables, one going back and forth, and pretty soon one would get a little stuck and you'd kind of bump the counter just to kind of make it keep going. We didn't always have that happen, but, you know, that was just part of what we dealt with vinyl records.
Oh, boy, that is for sure. And it was always the struggle. I mean, the needle, the cartridge, you know, it was always. And then they'd get out of whack with the weight, and, yeah, you have to really be careful. There was more than once there was a nickel sitting on there until it could be fixed the next day. But it all happened for sure. I did want to mention, that's right, Brian, I was hoping Brian would send me a text because he would remember Tom Williams was the last one.
Tom Williams,
of course.
And, okay.
And poor Tom, he's probably listening right now and thinking, John, I was just there with you. You know, so I'm sorry, Tom. Of course, Tom Williams was there when it finally ended. I also just got a note from our good friend Robbie Robinson. Of course, a Litchfield guy along with his brother Rex and Chuck Wilson and a bunch of guys who have been involved in the music business in L.A. for lots of years. Robbie, of course, has been music director for Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons for 43 years.
Yes.
Robbie just sent me a note letting me know that Tommy DeVito, who was one of the original Four Seasons, Tommy DeVito passed away last night.
My.
So he wanted to make sure I let people know that.
Sure.
Tommy was greatly maligned and a big part of the movie Jersey Boys, if you remember.
Oh, yes.
But Tommy, I guess Bob Gaudio is still around, and Bob Gaudio, I mean, and, of course, Frankie. And I'm not sure about the rest of it because they have had so many people. At one time, Rex, Robbie, and Chuck were all members of the Four Seasons.
Right.
You know, so that's awesome. And it is
such a legacy there.
Oh, my goodness, yes, that's for sure. So thanks, Robbie, for letting me know. Thanks, Brian, for letting me know and reminding me of Tom. So we're going to have more with Dwight coming up. So stick around. Don't go away. We've got plenty more to talk about. I'm talking to somebody who's got a little bit of history to talk about. And it is, of course, our friend Dwight Brockman, who was the voice of Night Rock from 1979 to 1982. Dwight, thanks for being here so much.
Pleasure.
One of the reasons why we wanted to do this, obviously, was we are approaching the 70th anniversary of WSMI's first going on the air, November 1st, 1950.
Yeah, and, you know, I've just had a small part of that. I mean, it's been a very memorable part.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that has gone into the station from the early beginning all the way through. It has so many people in this area in its coverage area. There's so many people that have so much, so much they can identify with the station throughout the years, whether it was the farm reports or whether it was the music, the rock and roll, the country, the easy listening. Just so many different facets has touched so many different people's lives throughout the years.
You know, one of the things that was a vital part of WSMI's programming, literally from day one, was, of course, covering special events.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to cover a few special events in your time?
Yes, and I still have a chip on my shoulder over that.
What happened?
Well, I mean, you're talking about special events. I'm thinking the sports, those types of things, because they would preempt
Night Rock 106. Yeah,
and I'd be like, oh, man, I want to do some music. And they'd say, no, we're going to break in here at 7 o'clock because the Hillsboro Hilltoppers
are
going to be playing tonight, and we're covering that. You know, but, you know, that was just part of the radio program, and there were a lot of people that really wanted to hear. And that's one great thing about radio. My teacher at Lewis and Clark Community College, he told me, his name was Ed Palin. Now, he was also the one that stood and covered the dirigible, the Hindenburg, whenever back in the 30s that it actually blew up in New Jersey.
He was one of the on-scene reporters?
He was one of the on-scene reporters, and he brought that tape back to Chicago at the station he was working at the time. But he told me, and the class at the time, he said, radio is the theater of the mind.
Oh, yes.
And so when these people were wanting to hear their sports, there were some people that just couldn't make it out to the school. No, and sometimes these teams would not play locally. They would play, you know, so many miles away.
Sure.
And yet the radio coverage allowed them to be right there, just as though they were sitting there in the bleachers watching these sporting events. But, of course, like I said, it would preempt Night Rock because it was usually in the evenings. And I would be there to work with the person who was covering the games because I would be playing the sponsor spots. And those commercials would go through. I'd be pushing the buttons for that.
Well, of course, when you come right down to it, you probably heard, for those 3 years, you probably heard 70 basketball games called by Johnny Krolik, who was another peanut M&M in the candy dish of WSMI,
right.
Just like you and I were
one.
You also heard a lot of football games, no doubt.
Yes.
I don't remember who was doing the football games back then.
I don't know, but I never did really get into football either because I always thought the quarterback was a refund.
Oh.
So, Terry Tote would be on there doing quite a bit of that announcing.
That's true. Terry did did a lot of that, and I think Tony did a lot of football,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, most definitely. Tony Taylor, another peanut M&M in the candy dish of WSMI. There were so many. When you were talking about doing Night Rock in that period of time from 79 to 82, the groups that you got a chance to interview, that was one thing, but the groups that you were playing were, of course, were so many more. Was there a particular group or two or individual that maybe were your favorite and maybe you played them a little more often? I mean, we're all subject to that, right?
Oh, yeah, and I did like my favorites, REO Speedwagon, Journey, Foghat, they were back then, and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Sure.
And there was always a steady diet of those people that would be out on a Friday night or a Saturday night at some college party, whether people were listening up by Lincoln north of Springfield, Mattoon, out in that area by Charleston, Mattoon. You'd have down at Marion, down south, and even in St. Louis, calls would come into the station. Hey, could you play... Or, hey, could you play this or that? You know, so, I mean, I would be getting those requests, and they were always for some of the favorites of, like I said, those groups, REO Speedwagon,
sure.
Styx, Foreigner. Those were the groups that people wanted to hear, and those were the groups I had no problem with playing.
Oh, yeah.
And that was where I was very thankful to Brian and Hayward, both of them, because they gave me the flexibility that I could go into the room where we kept the albums. I would pull an album and put that on, and I'd be listening to it, and be playing it on the air. And then I would think, you know, this song, this other song that I'm thinking of would go great with that song. So I'd quickly get up and go back into the album room, pull it, go back in, cue it up, and as soon as that one ended, went right into it.
Sure.
And that, there was a chemistry for playing music like that, because the DJ, the radio announcer, would be able to program his show without the influence of some sort of computer model. And that is one of the things that I think was really the key to the success of Night Rock, to have that particular flexibility to do that.
You're definitely right. And again, a lot of it boiled down to was it was not controlled by big advertising dollars. It wasn't controlled by a program director in New York, you know, or L.A. It was something that was done locally, and it was something that was done that fit the audience that we were playing for.
It was freedom. We had the freedom to pick and choose that those albums and those artists and play those songs. We did have a rotation of songs that were they were wanting to get into the mainstream, and we would get those songs, and it would be part of what we did. But for the vast majority of songs that people were listening to, it was the announcer, like myself, that would get up and go and pull the albums that I wanted to pull, that I would begin to program throughout the evening that I was on the radio. And I also carried that into the Late Show. The Late Show was a time whenever we would feature sometimes a whole album. Sometimes we would go back and forth between multiple albums of a particular group. And we would be programming that one artist starting at 10 o'clock in the evening all the way through, sometimes till up till 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Did you ever, and I have to remember this, but again, my memory over the years has slowed down a bit because I didn't do what you were doing. Mm-hmm. But did you ever at a particular point, were the Beatles a lot on the playlist?
Absolutely.
I wasn't sure if the Beatles were a big part of the playlist or not.
Yeah, all of those artists from that period of time, like the Beatles, and even going back even, gosh, I wouldn't say we were into the 50s, but definitely in the 60s, we would pull some of those major artists. And it's funny that you talk about the Beatles, because it was, honest, if my memory serves me right, it was on a Sunday night, late in the afternoon. And well, it was actually probably because I started Night Rock about 6 o'clock in the evening, and it wasn't very long after I had started that particular shift on that evening that the teletype, which was a, it was, how would you describe a teletype to our radio listeners?
Well, it's a typewriter without keys, and it's a big machine, and it had all the carriage and everything,
yeah,
but
it
didn't have a keyboard.
Yeah, it was usually from the Associated Press.
Right.
And so anything that the Associated Press wanted to get to us as far as a news item or breaking news, it would come through there. So I'm sitting in the control room, and all of a sudden that thing starts going crazy. And finally, I just knew something had to be up. So I got up away from my desk there at the control desk, and I went and looked, and I started reading, and it began telling me that John Lennon had just been shot in New York City, and he's in very serious condition. It wasn't very much longer. That thing went off again and started typing out a message telling me, which I then conveyed to my radio listeners, that John Lennon had passed away from those gunshot wounds. So that was one piece of history that took place, and I was able to communicate that to the listeners that were listening.
And one sound that we'll never hear again, because those teletypes, that technology is long gone,
mm-hmm.
but there is nothing like sitting in a control room, mild, minding your own business, and hearing those five dings,
mm-hmm.
because those bells were loud,
yes, they
and
were.
Those bells came in rapid succession, and they only meant one thing, a
major
something
news item.
Major
yes.
that was going to happen. We just had a text. I wanted to mention this to you, Dwight. I just got a text from one of the guys who used to listen, Tim Elliott. He said, you guys played ballads like Song of Crazy Horse.
Oh, yeah.
Alice's Restaurant that we didn't get to hear anywhere else.
You can get anything you want.
That's
at
right.
Alice's Restaurant.
And Eddie Hires just stopped up in here to say hi. And I know he probably listened to Night Rock back in the day. What was your favorite, Eddie? Can you yell out real loud? Do you remember?
Anything.
I never did play that song.
We're going to be back with more with Dwight in just a few minutes. This is John Michael, and we are back here with Dwight. Dwight, is just been a pleasure having you here with us today. Talking about Night Rock, talking about a very important part of history of WSMI-FM. So let me ask you, and I think this is probably maybe a question that you don't always get. But of all the groups that you did and the groups that you interviewed, were there two or three that maybe didn't have the notoriety, so to speak, but maybe they were especially popular in our area that maybe you got requests for? Were there a couple of them that maybe stood out at you that you don't hear much about?
Well, there was Missouri.
Oh, of course.
And they had the song Moving On.
Right.
That was one of the songs that... I mean, there were those groups, and I think we all know that there were those one-hit wonders. Mama Let Him Play Some Rock and Roll,
Sure.
was by Doucette.
Jerry Doucette, you
yeah.
bet.
Yeah, and then there was one other one I was thinking of.
Mason Prophet.
Yeah, it escapes me, the one I was thinking of. But that's par for the course. I'm getting older, and I don't remember everything like I used to. And we're going back quite a few years. But those things were out there that... You know, you would play them, and they really didn't come out with much more after that.
Right.
But yet there's still songs like that that people remember, even those one hits.
Sure. Well, since I have been spotlighting a different group or a different type of music every day for over 100 days now, mm-hmm. I have done, you know, some one-hit wonders and things like that. I've mostly done it on the pop side.
Sure.
I haven't done it on more the AOR, the album-oriented rock side. Deep tracks. I know that a lot of times a big part of those shows were not maybe the second or the third hit or maybe the first one you might go to as an album cut,
mm-hmm.
but there were some deeper ones. And there were bands that put out albums that were great from start to finish.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Yeah, in fact, part of the influence of me coming into radio is, I don't know if you remember this, and some of the listeners might recall when they used to have Super Jam down at Busch Stadium.
Oh, of course, of course.
Oh, man. I mean, they'd bring in, I remember, like, Angel was there. There was just numerous bands that came in there, and they would have all day long, you would have, like, five or six groups that would take the stage. And there was a lot of rock and roll going on through Super Jam, and people would, and that was, like, 77, 78, and then it was 79 that I decided to go into radio broadcasting. But there were some influences from going and attending those concerts that caused me to love rock and roll music and begin to move into that area where I would become a disc jockey.
You mentioned earlier as far as going to school at Lewis and Clark,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned Ed Palin. I have to mention... that Mr. Palin, did he ever get to be Dr. Palin? I don't remember if he did or not.
No, I don't think so.
But Ed Palin must have had an incredible ability to infuse that passion, because that was such a feeder for broadcasting.
Absolutely.
You know, Ken Beano was doing it at Lakeland as well. But I don't know of anybody who put more people to work in radio mm-hmm. than what Ed Palin and the guys that followed him at Lewis and Clark did. Because
yeah, they were the ones that were they were actually there when radio somewhat began.
Oh, yeah. Because that school was around for a long, long time.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think of Pete Baum. I think of, I think of Sean Bellent, who works with us now. Sean mm-hmm. Bellent was there. And also, Tom Williams, who worked for us for over 20 years, you know, was from Lewis and Clark. And I'm not sure if John Jatko went to Lewis and Clark. I think he might have went to Edwardsville.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Randy And Rita both went to Lewis and Clark. Rita Frazier, who was our farm director, Randy Prangy, our morning guy.
I didn't realize that there was such a roster.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So many people were literally fed to us through Lewis and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that was Olga. What am
yes.
I thinking? Of course, Olga was from Lewis and Clark. So many people went from our station, Terry, I'm not sure if Dave Hamlin ever did before me, but I know that Terry spoke numerous times at Lewis and Clark on like a career day.
Yes.
So we were always very much in the forefront and in the minds of people who went to Lewis and Clark.
Okay.
So we really appreciate what they did for us. Now, this history of WSMI coming up on our 70th anniversary, I want you, if you're listening, to realize you can help. If you know someone, maybe still have a connection with somebody who had worked at the station for any length of time over the years, whether it's 40 or 50 years ago, I wish you'd let me know. Text me at 710-1258. Let me know, because I'd certainly like to have them on and talk to them. Well, I'd have a dozen people or two dozen people if we could find them between now and that November 1st. Obviously, COVID is preventing us from doing a lot of things that we had planned to do. We're just not going to be able to do it. However, that doesn't mean we can't talk to them and talk about them. So if you've got a story, or if you've got anybody was that you can maybe hook us up with, I would appreciate it very much. Anything final that you'd like to say before we go? Because here's your shot, buddy.
This is my what do they call it? Like 5 minutes of stardom.
Yeah,
whatever.
There you go. That's it.
In the spotlight. I just want to say that I'm very thankful to WSMI, Hayward and Imitali, Brian, for just their leadership to have this station and continue what they. I know Hayward and Emma are no longer with us, but Brian continues the legacy. And it is something that people that in this area, I'm sure if there was a way to communicate to Brian back at the station, and I would encourage people that if you can even just, you know, send a card or a letter and let them know how much WSMI has meant to you during this very important time of this 70th anniversary, it has reached so many people for so many years. Even the news in the mornings, people started their day. This is something that I think, you know, until something's gone, you really don't know what you've had. And we take things for granted so much of the time. But here is a service that has been provided to area communities through the tallies. And they have had a great number of people that have worked under them throughout the years, including yourself and myself, that have been in there to continue what they felt was important for this area, for what they needed in this area, in the line of communication. And it is so diverse, from the farmers to the housewives to the people that are at their workplace in the area that could pick up that signal, or even the people that listen to Night Rock that were so many miles away but having a great time on a Friday or Saturday night listening to the music that was played.
Yeah, that's true. Night Rock is no longer with us, although we are, for those of you who may have not found it yet, playing some of those great classic rock songs every evening on 106.9. It's not called Night Rock. It will not ever be Night Rock again. That was something that floated across our history, and it was just perfect for the time.
It was.
But we are still playing some classic rock from 6 until midnight on 106.9 when there's not Cardinal baseball. And so you can tune in and maybe think about it and remember some of those people who brought that music to you a long time ago.
And I wanted to thank them for giving me the opportunity back then, because I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Oh, yeah.
If Hayward would not have said, "You're hired."
Yeah. That's true. Those words, "you're hired," opens a lot of doors.
Yes.
There's no question about that.
Yes.
I remember when Hayward said, "You're hired," I asked him, I said, "I've got one more quarter of school to go. Can, will you hold it for me for another 2 months?" And he goes, "No, I need you now." Okay. So, my mom never forgave me for that, but we made it okay.
Yeah. Some great memories. And I appreciate you having me this afternoon to talk about Night Rock and some of the things about the radio business. And, thank you for having me, John Michael Marty, and appreciate it.
Thank you, Dwight. Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of the next 6 months down in McClellan, Texas. I hope you'll have fun.
Thank you.
All right.
Try.
You bet. Bye-bye.